You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. For this episode, we'll be talking about Sugar, Copper Blue. In the room, I have Rob.
Hi, guys.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Hello.
And Kyle.
Sugar.
Copper Blue is the debut studio album by the American alternative rock band Sugar, produced by Bob Mould, Lou Giordano, and the genre is alternative rock and power pop. I'm going to read from AllMusic Review, Stephen Thomas Erwine. How ironic that after years fronting a hugely influential but desperately overlooked Husker Du, Bob Mould's first project with new band Sugar would become the most commercially successful project of his career. Of course, it was released just as the seeds sown by his former band were bearing bountiful fruits in the post-Nirvana alternative nation, which provided ample explanation for its phenomenal success. But Sugar were well deserving of their success regardless of time and place. A more aggressive contemporary guitar attack aside, stunning power punk masterpieces like The Act We Act, The Slim, and Fortune Teller bear all the vintage Mould musical traits. Telltale lyrics, great hooks, and snappy melodies. It's all underpinned by the unexplainable chilling tension between innocent beauty and dark melancholy that fans came to expect from Mould, and topped by his somewhat nasal, almost timid vocal harmonies. Other highlights include the 60s styles If I Can't Change Your Mind, the loud, beautiful guitars of Man on the Moon, Helpless, and the tongue-in-cheek Pixies tribute A Good Idea. All right, what do we think of Sugar, Copper Blue?
Might be a perfect record.
I really like this record.
Absolutely.
I'd never heard it before, but from your write-up, it sounds like it was very successful.
Yes. It was very successful.
Very critically
loved. I don't know.
Never heard it in my life.
I'd never heard any of these songs ever, and I liked them all.
I swear, no, I've heard one of these songs. Which one is it, Birch?
If I Can't Change Your Mind?
Yep.
Which was, a big rotation on MTV.
Yeah, this record's, I love Bob Mould's fucking vocal delivery. I don't know. It's very distinct to me. It's very compelling.
I love this so much more than the Husker Du shit.
I was going to say, I love what Bob Mould does.
Love it.
I like this vehicle better than the Husker Du vehicle.
Husker Du, I think a lot of it is the production. I liked those songs quite a bit. It's just the production, I could never get over it. And this just completely crushed me because I was like, the best of both worlds?
Yep.
Like,
sure.
Are you kidding me?
I can have my cake and eat it?
Yeah. It's a little more accessible in the pop front. Plus, the recording is super great. Yes. Yes, please.
So this in our cans right now, this would be the Pixies nod then, yeah?
Yeah, a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as I heard it, I was like, Pixies? And just the guitar work, I mean, it sounds like Santiago. Like, just those little, like, twingy, you know.
No,
I love that he, like, saw Nirvana and just... Bob Mould just saw Nirvana and was like, I can make my own record. And then just, it's like, but only the poppiest best songs. And it's this incredible end-to-end record that's just astonishing.
I mean, he was already doing it. That's the thing is, it was like right place. They finally caught up to him or, you know, sometimes that happens.
I got this.
Yeah. It's like sometimes an artist is just a little farther ahead of everybody else. And it takes luckily, though, I'm actually very surprised that it was able to come back around.
What label is this?
This is Rykodisc Creation.
OK.
Yeah.
OK.
Who had Happy Mondays, My Bloody Valentine. And he went with them because he respected Creation.
Yep.
You know, Primal Scream. I mean, Creation was killing it at this time.
Wasn't Creation also Teenage Fan Club?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I just looked back. Yeah, it is. Man, fucking Creation.
Also, Ryko Disc. I remember seeing this fucking record at Best Buy, like the extended Ryko Disc edition. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, Ryko Disc has some really good stuff.
Yeah, and pre-extended edition, like all this fucking rock and roll coming in under 45 minutes. Hot dog, my friend. Hot dog.
All killer, no filler. Yeah.
So yeah, seriously.
Freaking good.
Yeah. Had anybody heard this before?
No.
Nope.
Have you? Never heard this.
No.
Yeah, this is
not even Birch.
Nope.
It's a huge blind spot.
Complete oversight. I, you know?
Yeah, this is a fantastic record. You listen to it, first listen, you're like, oh, this is good. Vocals are great. You know, it's a straightforward record. You drive around listening to it a few times. Ooh, doggy.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some sadness here.
Yeah, then you dig into the lyrics and you're like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Are you okay, it's Bob? Brutal.
Is Bob going to be all right?
Are you okay?
It's raining in Seattle in 1992, my friends.
Well, yeah, he's talking like, yeah, push your head underwater. I mean, just on the song we're listening to right now, it's like, oh, yeah. Woof, so dark.
And it's so poppy, though. It's like,
yeah, you completely miss the melancholy sadness of these lyrics because you're just like, yeah, let's sing along.
Cool. It's brilliant. Yeah. And he's not even trying to be cheeky or whatever. Like, it's just
no.
Yeah. It's like, hey, I got a good song about sadness. Here you go. And you're like, oh, this rocks and I'm so sad.
Man, just song after song after song.
It's relentless.
There's good, well-crafted alt-rock songs.
Yeah, Ben, I hadn't been hit like this since that time I brought home that Supertrunk record like that we both had never...
Majesty Shredding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just like, holy shit. Why have I not been listening to Supertrunk my entire life? This is ridiculous.
I feel you. And on that connection, too. Yeah.
Cool.
Is it Hoover Dam? Is that the name of that song?
Yeah, Hoover Dam.
Oh, my God.
What's up with the, like, proggy synthy solo in Hoover Dam, which I love?
I don't know. It's awesome. It's cool.
I think they had a keyboard in the studio.
there are a lot of things like that. They have, like, a squeaky start. There's just a lot of little noises that they're throwing into this album, right? Slick starts with sort of like a metallic crunchy sound, and there's like a queasy sound reversal on Changes. It just has different things kind of thrown in to, you know, I think keep it fresh, keep the songs a little bit different. It works really well. There's like a bong rip, I think, on the right before a good idea.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, this was a goddamn treat.
I like this version of Man on the Moon better than the Automatic for the People version.
Okay.
I was worried you would go there. Versions. I'm disappointed you did.
Two songs with the same name.
Yeah, versions.
So they did sign with Ryko Disc in the US, but were still searching for a deal in Europe when Alan McGee, head of Creation, entered the picture. Of course, he signed Jesus and Mary Chain, My Bloody Valentine, and Primal Scream. He was informed that Mold's new project was available. He jumped at the chance to connect and to sign them. And luckily, Mold was happy to do it because of those other bands that had been on the label. So it's amazing.
Yeah, I bet this got way more airplay over there than it did here.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
I don't think Matt Pinfield was spinning this on 100 minutes.
Yeah.
120 minutes?
It's 120 minutes. And Pinfield didn't exist until the mid-90s. I don't remember who did 120 minutes from the get-go, but Matt didn't show up for a minute.
Was it Kennedy?
No, it wasn't Kennedy. Who did
100? I know it wasn't Ricky.
Hey, listeners, who was the original host of 120 minutes? I'm not going to look it up.
It peaked at number 8 on the U.S. Heat Seekers chart.
What the fuck is that?
Exactly. Even more impressively, became top 10 entry on the U.K. album chart.
And
it was successful. No one had really seen that coming. Also named Album of the Year on NME's 1992 list.
They're not wrong.
I mean, there's a good argument for it.
Yeah. I haven't heard a rock record this good in 92 yet.
I don't have the name of the critic, but I was reading a review of this. I love this. Every track manages to conjure similar feelings of both fizzy pop rush with the threat of something ominous lurking beneath the surface.
Yeah.
It's true. Like every song you're like singing along and then you listen a little close and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. I think Pixies do that very well too. Mm-hmm. So I get that sort of the same vibe.
It's an aesthetic that I appreciate.
In 1992, the presenter of 120 Minutes was either Dave Kendall or Louis Largent. Dave Kendall was 88 to 92. Louis Largent was 92 to 95, where Matt Pittenfield picked it up.
I refuse to do a podcast where I acknowledge. What did you say his name was?
Dave Kendall or Louis Largent.
Louis Largent. I don't recognize that person.
You cannot click their name to go to their own page. See? Mm. Yeah.
Hey, I know this song.
God, yeah, those sounds at the end of Changes that just keep you entertained long enough for
Helpless to kick in.
Helpless to kick in.
Ooh, that is a fucking song,
man.
Dude.
You know it's a good record when you love the song and you're excited about the next song coming.
Yeah. That's true. That is that is a very good album when you're like, oh wait, the next song's coming. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and not, I'm going to continue just comparing to that. Like, that the same way I feel about listening to Songs for the Deaf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just like, oh, yeah. Oh, here it comes. Ha ha.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Operation Mindcrime. Oh, I'm sad this song's almost over, but the next one's good too.
Yeah, dude, he's got such great hooks.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. The guitar lines are really cool on this album.
What is it about his vocals? I appreciate his own delivery. There's something about his vocal delivery on this record that it's like hypnotic.
It fits directly with the guitar.
Yeah.
It feels like it just feels like an extension of one wall of guitars.
But it still stands out though. I mean,
oh yeah, I can hear
it. It doesn't get muddy with the guitar lines.
No.
It's very distinct.
And it was a wall of guitars.
Yeah.
Did you look up what is what was going on there? Just the way that he had his like his signal chain set up, it was a Roland SDE 1000 delay that went into an Eventide H3000 SE that he ran into stereo, then compressed into a DBX 1606 two-channel compressor. And at that point, he had a left and right signal. So he had a pair of stacks on each side, which made up of a Roland JC 120 solid state, a 4x12 Marshall cabinet, and a 4x12 Sonic cab. And they all had Celestian speakers in it. And then on top of that, on each stack, he had a Fender concert.
Like, yep. Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Some Dinosaur Jr. shit right there. Yeah. Yeah.
My first listen to this, I was listening without Googling anything or looking up a Wikipedia page or anything like that. I was halfway through the album and I was like, man, this album's so good, but this vocalist is just really copping Husker Du. Oh, yeah. You know? And I was like, that's really my only critique. Like, other than that, it's really fantastic.
How dare I take umbrage with this singer. Bob Mould should be getting royalties from this album.
Has Bob Mould heard this? Like, surely he's got an opinion about this.
Yeah, this record's a powerhouse. I'm super excited. I look forward to listening to it over and over.
Yeah.
This has been a really good week for records, guys.
It's a good week for listening to music, absolutely. Does anyone know, does Sugar the Band continue to slay?
Bob Mould does.
Bob Mould absolutely does, yes.
No, they did a Beaster after this. which I'm not familiar with, File Under Easy Listening, and then that's it.
They had an album called Besides in 95, B-sides. Looks like. Oh, B-sides.
There you go. but yeah, that's it. It's kind of special.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Bob Mould is still very active. I hear new Bob Mould shit on a community radio station every year or two, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How's he sounding?
He sounds great. He is still Bob Mould.
Goddamn Hoover Dam.
Hoover Dam, yes. I was like,
interesting.
Oh, this song's changes. Really good. I got excited whenever it came on. I was like, oh, it's Hoover Dam time.
Yeah, just very memorable, too. That really struck me when I was listening to this. And it's like sometimes it lyrics or melodies just wash over you a bit. Mm-hmm. I think we get a little listening fatigue because we're, you know, trying to run through the albums and do everything.
Absolutely.
And this one, I just was like, oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
stuck in your head like immediately.
Yeah. It's definitely a set piece. Like it's a centerpiece too. Just, yeah, I get so excited when the song comes on.
Oh, here's that proggy part.
Yeah. Reminds me of later Led Zeppelin stuff.
Yeah.
I was
yeah.
Well, Peter Gabriel.
Oh, what's that? There's a specific Zeppelin track, Rob.
Yeah, it's off of In Through the Outdoor, and
yeah,
it's John Paul Jones doing the synth line. And I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
I learned it for Cat Casual, but we never covered it.
I can't think of the name of that song while I'm listening to Sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mystically, that's the same synthesizer that ABBA used.
No, wait, what's the Peter Gabriel song? Is it I want to say Salisbury Steak.
Oh, Salisbury Hill.
Salisbury Hill.
Thank you. Are you sure Salisbury. It's not Salisbury Steak?
I wish.
Pretty sure, yeah.
That's a Weird Al version.
At first they were going to call it like Bob Mould Band something, and he was
that's
like
lame.
Yeah. But at the time, no one wanted to see performers, single performers. That wasn't a, you know, a thing at the time. People
like Whitney
to see
Houston
bands.
Or Madonna.
Yeah, but 90s. That was all changing in the 90s.
Isn't that why Bowie started up with a Tin Machine?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Tin Machine gets a bad rap, man.
I love every time we bring it up, we say the same shit. They do get a bad rap. That record rules.
Tin Machine.
Rob, the Zeppelin song is All My Love.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I can hear that. You know, Ween did a really sick cover of that song.
Yeah.
Let's bring it back to Sugar.
Fucking rules. Yes. Birch. What were you saying?
I was just saying they just picked their name from a sugar packet that they saw in a diner one day. That's it.
Perfect.
Story over. The same producer also worked with the Goo Goo Dolls. And Atari, the Ataris specifically requested that they work with Lou because of the way that Copper Blue sounded.
God, I fucking hate the Ataris.
Yeah.
I don't care for the Ataris.
but at all. But I get it when you hear this and then it's like, oh, yeah, you were definitely going for it. This.
Fucking lag wagon hacks.
I saw the Ataris open for L7 and they were god awful. L7 destroyed.
Yeah.
Ataris. Do you remember that show, Rob?
Apropos of something, I would remember that show, but I got grounded and I couldn't go to that show. I had two tickets. I had one to go see Beck, Atari Teenage Riot, and
I went to that show.
And the Roots. Or
yep, I was there.
I could go to L7, so I picked the Beck show.
Mm.
Which I think I chose.
At the L7 show, they rocked so hard, the bassist hit this bass note, and part of the ceiling landed on the audience.
It was the Emerson that is...
It was the Emerson, yes.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, that place was...
We're still talking about Sugar, right?
We sure are. We are on the
Sugar,
right, baby.
The band was named in Athens, Georgia, at a Waffle House restaurant when Mould spotted a sugar packet on the table. And when The other that's two not band a great members story. Were sitting. Yeah, it's stupid. But
that's a real. I wasn't Michael tell Sipes'
vegan
story.
Restaurant.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring it back. Their first concert was February 20th, 1992, at the 40 Watt Club in Athens, Georgia. After a few weeks warming up in REM's downtown practice space.
Oh man!
Oh, cool.
There's your connection.
Cool, man.
We should name our band Sugar, like the sugar packet.
We should name our band Sump Pumps because I read a comic once. Dick. I can't get over how good each one of these. Also, another thing that it reminds me of is that first Foo Fighters record.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention Foo Fighters. It's just has to be influential.
100%.
What's the connection here? How do you mean?
Just track to track, like how each song is like, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's all like vibrant and
is this something you guys just came up with, or is this like a
no it's just this, it just feels very much like a Foo Fighters endeavor, or Foo Fighters were definitely inspired by this. There's no
specifically
way
specifically their first record.
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
Okay, no, I'm just I'm trying to get what you guys are putting down.
I mean, it's more it's Nirvana-ish, but it has this pop element. It's power pop. It has that.
Which is what Dave Grohl kind of like.
He gravitates towards that.
Absolutely.
For sure. It's so well produced too. I think that's another thing. When I put this on too, I had never heard it before, but I instantly felt like it might be the most 90s album I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, kind of.
Was it Enemy who gave it like number one album of the year?
That is correct.
Yeah, 1992.
Was it Enemy? Okay.
That was Enemy.
Like I read that and I was like, oof. There's so much competition for 1992.
It's true.
Like even just best rock record, it's like that is a fucking gauntlet. Like that is one of the best years of rock and roll. And I mean, objectively, right? I'm not.
Sorry, what? When did this? How early did this one come out?
When in 92? It was September 4th.
Okay, yeah. So that's late. The Enemy had heard everything that had come before it, and then there was a few more months left.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like that stuck out to me for them to just be like, "This is, you know, this is their first record." I mean, as a band.
I mean, I wouldn't put Alice in Chains above this.
I don't know.
You would or wouldn't?
I wouldn't.
I think. I mean, I'm looking at what we have in the book, and I see an argument for it, to tell you the truth. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
I love tons of albums in 1992, but I could see someone like arguing like this is such a solid record.
What do you think? I mean, I kind of blend 91 and 92 together with like record releases. So like, what are we talking specifically? Like what? In
I mean,
your
we're
mind,
talking
Birch.
We're talking Chronic.
OK,
we are talking Automatic for the People. Rage Against the Machine.
Ooh.
And like Pavement.
Slanted and Enchanted.
Yeah. Ambient Works. Yeah. And then we'll be getting into PJ Harvey, Dry. Ooh. And Sonic Youth, Dirty, Bone Machine.
Ooh.
Tori Amos, Little Earthquakes, The Predator.
Oh my God.
Alice in Chains, Dirty, and Pantera, Vulgar Display. Nick Cave, Henry's Dream, you know. Lots of great stuff, but
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. But
you know, somebody can make an argument that this was
for sweet, sweet rock and roll. This one kind of has my this.
If you're
do you agree, Ben? Like
I think that this album would have its day in court. Absolutely. Like I don't know if I could right now say it's the best album that came out in 92.
That's fucking me up.
There's other contenders, but it would be an interesting discussion.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many bands that I've spent like decades with. And then
I will say at this time, I mean, what had just come out, though, is like Nirvana, Nevermind, right? Was just everywhere.
Exploded,
huge. And so if you're looking for the next, like a continuation, like the next Nevermind, this kind of fits that.
A little bit.
Like, kind of feels like it's something.
Is it though?
Well, it just feels like that. I feel like Nirvana, the Nevermind album, is a very solid record from track to track. And this feels the same way.
This album is fantastic. Like the songwriting, the craftsmanship, the performing, the playing is so good. And it could absolutely be argued for best album of the year. And I know this would be what I'm about to say, 91, not 92. It was my first listen for this. It was also my first listen a month or two ago for Bandwagon-esque. Bandwagon-esque grabbed me by the balls, like more so than this one. But that's just my personal experience with it. You know, that's just preference. I think that Copper Blue by Sugar, I would love to hear that debate, and I'd love to take part in that debate. I don't know what side of it I'd end on. You know,
it's a fantastic fucking record.
Yeah,
it is. I'm very surprised I'd never heard any of it before.
Same.
No matter what, I could easily see someone saying just top 10 of that year.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Top five, whatever. Yeah. You know, you can, I think it messes you up when you try to like just pick one thing out of, you know, every genre and everything. But
and that's kind of the point of this podcast.
Yeah.
That is the book that we were talking about.
Yeah. But
happy fucking surprise for me.
Sure.
Never would have suspected that this is what this album would have sounded like.
Same, Rob. This made me smile ear to ear because it was like a new discovery of like some earnest, fucking good, expressive art rock music. Like they worked really hard on this, and it sounds great. And I connected to it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna read you a little bit of Kreisgau's thing here. The miracle isn't that Bob Mould has progressed, thank God. It's that he picked up where he left off after 6 years spent straining over warehouse songs and stories and two over-arranged records with his name on the cover. He only fabricates a Husker Du album, but makes it sound as if it just rushed out of him, like a great Husker Du album should. Never mind who takes Grant Hart's place because it isn't the new drummer, fashioning the pop-wise tunes that were always Hart's specialty and taking on all the vocals himself, the new musician is Mold. Maybe he has progressed after all. A-.
Nice.
Cool.
Wow.
And I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do too. Sometimes I like this Kreisgau fellow.
He has his days.
Limited edition initial run of the CDs was release a Ryko disc in the front and back metal copper sleeve with each of the 2,500 copies containing a one-of-a-kind Polaroid photo taken by one of the three band members and stamped on the back with...
That's so intriguing.
That's so
Sugar
cool.
Copper Blues Tour 1992. So if you have a Polaroid, damn.
Holy shit, that's awesome. That's
share it with us.
Super limited.
I didn't even have a chance to Google it, but I read that and I was like, oh my God. Because that's a lot of pictures.
Yeah.
It is. And what a cool tour project. Everyone has a Polaroid camera. Take pictures because they're going to go into every compact disc.
Yep.
Like how many? 10 per pack of film?
Yes.
Yeah.
250.
Jesus Christ. That's a...
It's intriguing. Admit to yourself, it sounds intriguing.
It is intriguing. Yeah. I am intrigued.
And they were about $1 a piece, so it'd be, about $2,500.
I mean, if the record label is footing the bill, there's always an excuse to take a Polaroid on tour.
Is Ryko Disc like flush with cash though?
Creation.
Ryko Disc.
No, this is Ryko Disc.
It's
for their CD release.
Yeah. They're always in the bargain bins in the 90s.
Okay, so what? 2,500 Polaroids, $2,500. They got $2,500.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
They're good.
And it was actually copper on the inside? Or was it just painted?
It says in a front and back metal copper sleeve.
So it was copper.
No, but copper is also the name of the color.
It's a color.
Okay.
Yeah.
Copper tone is what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right.
Anything else other than
No, listen. Find this album. Listen to it. Although,
yeah, check it out.
All you British dads, you probably already know, huh?
Yeah.
British dads.
Yeah. How dare driving you
driving around listening to this record? Working out. This is a great driving around working out.
Yeah.
British dads record.
Love it.
Stop saying British dads.
Fine.
British dads.
Other people listen to this record, this podcast.
It's mostly British dads.
No,
though,
it's
right?
not. No, no.
It's rated BD, British dads. This record's so good.
Yeah. I listen to it.
It's really good.
Many, many times.
After we finish this podcast, I'm going to go get the cover of this tattooed on my lower back.
Like what? This album cover?
What did you do with this album cover?
Yeah. It's kind of abstract, man.
It kind of looks like the album cover for Load.
Right above my butt. Yeah.
That's going to be a great tattoo, Kyle.
In our peer group that knew about this?
No, I've never known someone to be a big fan of Sugar.
Yeah, me neither.
I think it had to be someone who was already into Husker Du and was a big Bob Mould fan and then got there.
Yeah.
Which probably our Wisconsin friends.
I had already, probably. Yeah, and I had already known. I mean, I knew about Husker Du and I had listened to the album, but I had never like followed up. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed I never heard this record before. I listened to Husker Du. Yeah. God damn it.
Well, now you know.
Yeah, now we know. Positives all around, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah,
of course.
Yes.
I feel like it'd be a hard not to go that way. Unless you're just not into the sort of like pop rock.
If you're a wiener.
Not say I'm that. Just,
only a Sith deals in absolutes. I apologize.
All right. Next time we'll be talking about Tom Waits' Bone Machine. All right. Thanks, y'all.